Yesterday, we managed to complete not the entire chapter 5 of Canto 7, but the instruction portion of chapter 5. And we'll hear the rest of chapter 5 briefly this morning. The section ended with Hiranyakashipu deciding, not just deciding, angry, threw his son on the ground, kill him, enemy. That's where it ended. Not a nice man. So this morning we'll go through just the beginning part of a long chapter, chapter 6, and then we'll continue chapter 7. It's two chapters of the next section of Prahlad's teachings. Very expansive, very detailed, very important, because as we heard, we're going to hear it again. He's teaching the way of pure devotional service. His words are expressions of him. And, of course, the Supreme Personality of Godhead who sent him to teach the ways of and the mode of pure bhakti. So there's this contrast of impure bhakti, like, you know, bottom of the barrel impure bhakti of Hiranyakashipu and his teachers. And then there's the world that is around us. And then there's us that are in the process to different stages of the process of striving for the goal. So, we'll do a little review. Because I don't know if they still have this, but when I was small, there was this thing for children of paint by numbers. They still have for kids? Paint by numbers? Yes? Okay. Or connect the dots and then you get a picture. So that's what I'm attempting to do. I'm going to repeat again the connect the dots method or the paint by numbers method so that the picture becomes clear. This, the big picture of Prahlad's teachings, then his prayers. We'll be touching one session just on his prayers again, chapter 9. So teachings to his classmates is in chapter 6. Just again, some glorification and appreciation of the person who we're hearing from. Prahlad is one of the 12 supermost authorities in the whole history of creation. That's a big title. One of the 12 Mahajans found in Canto 6, declared by one of the 12, Yamaraj, to the Yamadutas. And Prahlad is at the top of the list. Made reference to this already, making it again, from chapter 10. In text 22 of chapter 10, Madhvacharya is quoting Skanda Purana, where, this is Prabhupada's purport, where Prahlad Maharaj is considered the best. Amongst the best. That's a good title, and look at the list. Shukadev Goswami and Vyasadev and everybody. He's the best of the best. So that's who we're hearing from. And you've seen this slide before. You probably see it again. In the introduction section of chapter 6, here's a part of what Prabhupada writes. two sentences. By accepting the lotus feet of Prahlad Maharaj, who is in the parampara succession, that is, he heard from Narada. Now, he heard from Narada, but Narada's in the list of 12, and Prahlad's the best. One will be able to understand the mode of spiritual life. That's important. But we have to take shelter of his lotus feet and pada rishekam, pada abhishekam. Take his instructions and take shelter of him through his instructions. That's the invitation, the opportunity of Srimad Bhagavatam. Then we can understand the mode of spiritual life. In accepting this mode of activity, there is no need for material qualifications, which comes out abundantly, particularly in his prayers, because he, like a devotee, he's embarrassingly humble, totally qualified, and abjectly humble, which is fantastic. So, little review on what we heard, because this is the connect the dots section. The first instruction or teaching came to his father. We'll go back so you don't get distracted. It's the starting point. It's where, you know, dot number one goes. And so, Dehinam and Asadgrahat. It's two things. There was part of the question and answer session yesterday was one who is rooted in false ego. How do you go forward? So Asatgrahat is that false ego. Dehinam, that's all of us, we have a body. And then Asatgrahat is accepting the body to be the self. And then I, and then mine. And that the consequence is intelligence becomes filled with anxiety. We also heard the intelligence becomes bewildered. And we take what is wrong to be right and what is right to be wrong. And even if we're good people or trying to be good people and so forth, we miss the target, the goal. So that's a foundational point. And then the next section is, that was to Hiranyakashipu, what's the best thing he learned. And then give up that way of life and go to the forest and worship the personality of Godhead. He went to the forest for another reason, to become the eternal ruler of the universe. That wasn't to worship the personality of Godhead. So the next section of teachings is to Shanda and Amarka. And here it focuses on several things, but it extends the position of duality, the notion of duality, because the first words, when Shanda and Amarka want to know, where'd you get this? Which agent of the enemy gave you this? Vishnu being the enemy and anyone representing him being an enemy. I've heard of friends and enemy, and now I'm seeing it. Then this verse, sva pare, thinking in terms of friends and enemy, sva para, sva, one's own business or interest or what's important to you. What's your program? And then there's other people that may be interfering with your program, and so there's enemies. You can coexist with people in a neutral state as long as they don't interfere with your interests, and then they do, and they're an enemy. You do stuff if you're in this world of duality. You can tolerate it. But Svapara, the friends and enemy consciousness, results in Atma, Abodhihi. Intelligence doesn't permit one to see super soul or see the soul instead when sees duality. And the path out of duality, muyanti. Intelligence is bewildered. You can't see Krishna and you can't see the path to Krishna. You see something, you see devotional service some other way, you see Krishna some other way, but you can't see properly. The friends and enemy program. And you wanted to know how I got this intelligence. I got this intelligence, this consciousness from Lord Vishnu. The same intelligence that you have to see friends and enemy, I don't see Vishnu as enemy, and he gave me the intelligence to see devotional service. Now, he doesn't say, I heard it from Narada. Not disclosing that to them. You know, they will offend Narada. So he doesn't disclose. And then there's another section that we covered. Well, another section, number three, is devotional service. Rani Kashipu asks again, and he lists the nine processes of bhakti. Very important verse. And Rani Kashipu then turns to Shanda and said, you spoiled him. They said, no. He's a spontaneous bhakta. So don't falsely accuse a Brahmin. It's not the right thing to do. It's bad. It's not good. So then he turns to Prahlad. If you didn't learn from your teachers, where'd you learn? So listen carefully. This is to connect the dots. From one to two, now here's number three. You're in the bodily conception of life. You should let go of that bodily conception of life and the attachment to the temporary. That's detachment and attachment to the Supreme. Next is those who don't do that. They see friends and enemy. They can't see super soul. They can't see the way of devotional service. And you see Vishnu as enemy, but I don't see that way because he is giving me the intelligence to see, as I'm seeing, the way of devotional service. Same with us. How to go from being a mixed devotee to an unmixed devotee? Super soul can give that intelligence. So, next is the challenge. If you didn't get it from your teachers, where'd you get it? So now we're going to go through quickly. This is just review, the paint by numbers program. Two very often quoted verses. You saw these yesterday evening. Matir na krishne paratak svato va mito vipadyeta grahak ratanam adanta gobir vishatam tamishram punak punash charvata charvananam. There's alliteration in the verse. It has the ornaments of beautiful composition. So, matir na krishne abhipadyeta. Color-coded here. Remembrance of Krishna or Krishna consciousness does not arise. You want to know? Parata svato va mito. Even if I explained it, or you made effort on your own to understand it, or a combination of the two, we attended a Hare Krishna conference, and we tried together to awaken Krishna consciousness. you wouldn't get it. Krishna consciousness will not arise. Why? Graha pratanam. Too much attention. You keep the anchor down, you're not going to get it. You may be able to give an A in an exam, in your Bhakti Shastri exam, and give the right answer, but you're not going to get it. If vrata, the vow or the determination, the consciousness is attachment to the temporary, asat, grahat. It's not being a householder, it's attachment, undue, we discussed this yesterday, undue attachment. There's proper attachment. There was, when you're, you know, it's not balancing, it's proper, and over-attachment is not proper, and that the attachment that is proper should be purified. Just, you know, reviewing our discussion yesterday. I wasn't satisfied with the answer. There is some what's proper, what's not proper, what's too much, what's a proper attachment. Krishna conscious attachment is proper attachment. We're attached to Krishna, and attachment to Krishna includes Krishna's, the family. Repeating again, we'd be dead if there wasn't attachment, if there wasn't affection, if there wasn't affinity for others. We'd be dead. We'd be stone. So that's not recommended, but not undue attachment. And the due attachment, the appropriate attachment, needs to be spiritualized, Krishnaized, with Krishna at the center. Krishna is to be pleased by that attachment. One devotee asks Srila Prabhupada, is it okay to be attached to your service? Prabhupada, yes. And if the spiritual master assigned a different service, you become attached to that different service. Not, oh, I'm attached to that service. Attachment that's with Krishna at the center and guided by representatives of Krishna. I mean, that's a high platform, but that's the Krishna conscious platform. So attachment is human. And human isn't bad. Human is good. We're going to hear in just a moment. First verse of chapter 6. It's special, human form of life. So, here's the translation. Good verse to remember. Quote it again and again. These two phrases, Matir Nikrishne and Punak Punash Charvata Charvananam. So, because of their uncontrolled senses, Adanta Gobir, persons too much attached to materialistic life, Grihavratanam, make progress towards hellish conditions, Vishatam Tamishram. We're going to see this again. Pay attention. Vishatam Tamishram. Progress towards hellish conditions and repeatedly chew that which has already been chewed. Their inclinations towards Krishna are never aroused, either by the instructions of others, by their own efforts, or by a combination of both. So the question was, were you getting this? Even if I explained it, you wouldn't understand. Or your efforts to understand won't work in the combination. Then another, maybe of all the verses, well, it's way up there in the often quoted verses, this first phrase, Na Tevadu Swarta Katemi Vishnu, by our founder Acharya. And this is the world in which we live. And we're part of the world in which we live. So we need not just to get an A in our exam, we need to embrace from the heart level the Swartha Gatim, the goal of life, is Vishnu. The goal of every little detail, like family life and parenting and work and social interactions and our career and everything. Your income, your expenses, your shoes, your dhoti or sari, you know, everything is with that purpose, pleasing Vishnu, pleasing Krishna. Those that don't know, Dharashaya. Asha means desire. And Durasha is bad desire. Durasha. So, attachment to material consciousness. We're trying to get out of material consciousness and we're attached to material consciousness. At least certain parts of it. Certain parts of it are disgusting. But certain parts of it we're attached to, and we just carry our baggage with us into the house of bhakti. It doesn't belong in the house of bhakti, so we have some turmoil in our mind, in our relationships, in our career, in our lives, in our interactions with the world around us, inside and outside. Durashaya. Why? Bahir artha manina. Bahir artha, the happiness is outside of myself. I just have to get my hands around it. It's out there. I'm convinced. Even I'm getting bashed. I'm convinced it's out there. And like a donkey, I just keep going after it. And then another very often quoted phrase, andhayatandair upaniyamanais, the blind leading the blind. So, in the world, there's leaders and followers. It's just the way of life. And when the leader is blind, the followers, who are also blind, person who's not blind isn't going to follow someone who's blind. But a person who's blind will follow somebody who's blind. And that's the way of material life. It's just like, you know, anatomy of material existence here. Te pisha tantriyam uru damni badha. One is bound by fruitive activities. Gee whiz, read Bhagavad Gita, and how many times do you read that word, fruitive activities? And we're bound by that consciousness. Even in the realm of bhakti, we do something because we want something. Now, Prahlad's teaching is, no, don't do something because you want something. That's business. That's not bhakti. That's not a devotee. Certainly not a pure devotee, and he even says it's not a devotee in his prayers. We'll see it, chapter 10. So, very important verse. Persons who are strongly entrapped by the consciousness of enjoying material life, that's durashaya, the consciousness of enjoying material life. Here's something I've quoted at least 100 times. Here's 101. Prabhupada. One of the primary duties of a spiritual master is to thoroughly instruct the disciple in the abject futility of finding happiness in fruitive activities. Prahlad Maharaj. It's really a good phrase. I'll say it again. It's such a good phrase. I like saying it twice. One of the primary duties of the spirit. So Prahlad is our spiritual master in the line of disciplic succession. He's teaching. He's teaching us. One of the primary duties of the spiritual master is to thoroughly instruct the disciple in the abject futility of finding happiness through fruitive activities. That comes at the bottom. Strong cords, uru dhamni, the strong cords of fruitive activity. We're bound. We bring that bondage into the house of bhakti. At least in the sadhana stage, we still have all these expectations of it should be like this, or others should be like that, or something. And if not, then harumph. No. And entrapped by the consciousness of enjoying material life, and who have therefore accepted as their leader, guru, or similar blind man attached to external sense objects. This is bahir-artha maninas, external sense objects. They cannot understand that the goal of life is to return home, back to Godhead, and engage in the service of Vishnu. So this is part of his answer. Where does this come from? Dad, I gave you the answer. You couldn't, because you can't understand. The goal is Vishnu. You see him as enemy. So super soul is giving you the enemy consciousness or the enemy intelligence. So you're not going to understand. You're attached to this other program. You're the blind person leading other blind people. And I'm not going there because I'm not blind. As blind men guide another blind man, miss the right path and fall into a ditch, materially attached men led by another materially attached man are bound by the ropes of fruitive labor, which are made of very strong cords, and they continue again and again in materialistic life, suffering the threefold miseries. Very important. So that's teachings. Now we're going to hear Prahlad speak to his classmates. And these have been short and kind of like sutra-like, foundational-like. And then comes, you know, the picture starts to fill in when he speaks to his students. But we're going to hear the first verse this morning, the first verse of his instructions. So this is where we ended up. All that was review. Hiranyakashipu ordered that Prahlad Maharaj should be killed. And his obedient followers were ready to do the dirty work. Kill a 5-year-old boy because he's devoted to the enemy. Now, innocent Prahlad, what did he do? He remembered, right, of the 9 processes of bhakti, which we heard earlier, him reciting to his father. His perfection was always remembering. Based on Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam, or Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto. So he didn't forget, even in the most extreme of circumstances. So the verses say he tried many, many things. Many, many things. It didn't work. So then it specifically said some additional things. So besides this little list, it was many, many things. The den of snakes, push him off a cliff, stampeded by an elephant. There's the snakes again. In a fire or a pot of boiling oil in the midst of a fire. They tried to kill him in many ways, but were unsuccessful. He who was the terror of the universe, literally, His son, 5-year-old boy, is not afraid. And not only not afraid, but he can't harm him at all. He's got some power. Greater than my power. He became fearful. And Shanda and Amarka, they recognized that fearfulness. And so they came to pacify him. And this is how the chapter ends. Chapter 5. Don't worry. He's a little boy. He'll get over it. We're good teachers. We know the way of divide and conquer and, you know, all those rules of materialistic life, and we'll work on him. Give up your grief and anxiety. He's young. He's impetuous. There was nothing. He tried already everything he could do. Nothing worked. So he entrusted again Prahlad to the teachers. And so Prahlad's back in school. And then, this is a little summary. Chapter 6 summary. One day when the teachers were absent from class, Prahlad began to speak Krishna consciousness. And the result of it was the students really liked it. And all of his class friends, they gave up being demons and became devotees. So here's the last verses of chapter 5. One day, the teachers Shanda and Amarka went home to attend to household duties. The classmates of Prahlad called them to play. Prahlad Maharaj, who was truly the supreme learned person, then addressed his class friends in very sweet language. Very sweet language. All the children were very much affectionate and respectful to Prahlad Maharaj and were not so polluted. Their hearts and eyes being fixed upon him, they looked at him. With great earnestness. So this is this. They were eager to hear. That's a qualification. They were looking up to him. That's another qualification. Quickly they moved because of the power of Prahlad. Because Prahlad had the same power speaking to his teachers in Taranikashipu. But they weren't so polluted. It made it much more quick. So that's the end of chapter 5. And then this summary is, he's going to smilingly teach about the uselessness of materialistic way of life. So this is, you can't, devotees, we can't progress if we hold on to asat. We have to engage with asat because that's the world we're in. But remaining attached to hoping to find happiness in asat, that expectation for finding happiness there in sense objects and interacting with them in the right way, whatever it may be, our favorite combination of things, there's no happiness there. So if there's no happiness there, what do? Let go of that happiness and become devoted to this. So we can't, it's part of, we'll hear in the session after breakfast. This is the Jnana Vairagya principle, or Yukta Vairagya principle of the Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. So one of the messages in this first verse, now we're going to be discussing the first verse of chapter 6. Prahlad's teachings to his classmates. So many times, Prabhupada quotes this one, especially the first line, or the first two lines. Let's chant together. Komara acharet pragyo dharman bhagavatan iha durlabham manusham janma tad api adruvam artadam. No, break down the words. Komara acharet. And this komara indicates a certain stage of life. It's the stage when children go to school. Komara, 5. So from the tender age of childhood is in his translation. It can start earlier. It should start earlier, we hear. But instruction-wise specifically, pragyo, we find this word multiple times in chapter 5. Who knows the meaning of pragya? Intelligence. Those who are intelligent. Stitta pragya and so forth. Situated in intelligence. Where do you get it? You get it from Krishna. And if you don't get it from Krishna, you don't get it. He's willing to give it. He wants to give it. But if we're attached to the temporary, then he won't force you. He'll offer it, but you won't get it. Bhagavat Dharma. So this is the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam is Bhagavat Dharma. And the human form of life, especially those who are intelligent, should be given the opportunity, my dear classmates. You want to go play. Children like to play. But from the tender age of childhood, there should be this nice instruction in Bhagavad Dharma. And durlabham indicates rarely achieved. Rarely achieved. Very special. Something that you understand is valuable, it's just human nature, you protect it. Supposing you have some wealth, supposing you have heirlooms, this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's explanation. You don't neglect it. You put it in a very safe place and you treasure it and value it, and because it's valuable, you hold it dear to yourself and you protect it. So this human form of life is really rare, really valuable, very special. My dear friends, please consider. Manusham janma, this birth in the human form of life, is very rare. And tad, pronoun referring to this rare human form of life, api adruvam, although impermanent, because all bodies are impermanent, everything of this world is impermanent, but the human form of life, artadam, has the potential, special design of the human form of life to achieve the goal of life, to achieve perfection in life. Rare. Special. Don't lose the opportunity because you don't know what's next. They're children. Children like to play. There's a rare exception here and there, but children like to play. And so here he is, Mahajan, the best of the Mahajans, explaining. This is a foundational verse that the rest of chapter 6 is expanding on. And for that matter, the whole of the Bhagavatam is expanding on. And something that Srila Prabhupada particularly valued. That is, perpetuating Krishna consciousness through the next generation. There's a few family people here. And some of the family people have children. And if you don't have children, someday when you grow up, you'll have children, most likely. And so, very important message from our founder, Acharya, and it's rooted in Prahlad's teachings, and he believed it. And he acted on it personally. So here's Prabhupada's translation. One who is sufficiently intelligent, that's this pragya, should use the human form of body from the very beginning of life. In other words, from the tender age of childhood. That's this komara achara. They should utilize or engage achar, conduct, behavior, engage the human form of life. What? To practice activities of devotional service. And the negative is giving up other engagements. Now, giving up their engagements doesn't mean take sannyas or leave your family or leave your career or leave school or, you know, don't do those temporary things, just do devotional service. But devotional service is engaging with temporary things also. The temple. Not eternal. The body, etc. But we engage exclusively in everything. Everything. And if there is something that's not in this realm of devotional service, that we step back from. Like, you know, what we won't eat. We don't engage everything. I learned this from visiting China. There's a brand of Buddhism in Southeast Asia. They're not vegetarian. Now, Buddha's teaching was very clear. But, over time, their brand of Buddhism is the monks go out and accept. There's a rationale behind it, but they're just dependent on whatever comes, and whatever comes is what they eat. And if it's whatever it is, they eat it because they didn't cause the killing, somebody else did, and they just received it as a charity, and they eat it. But that's what people are up to, and so they eat whatever they eat. Detachment. So, giving up all other engagements. The human body is most rarely achieved. Durlabha, value it very much. And although temporary, like other bodies, it is meaningful. Meaningful. We'll see that word in just a moment. Because in the human form of life, that's this artadam, because in this human form of life, one can perform devotional service. Even a slight amount of sincere devotional service can give one complete perfection. Now, we're not there yet, so maybe we're not sincere. But we're sincere, but also mixed. So this is an encouragement to go beyond mixed. There's various species of life. This is now we're going to Prabhupada's purport. Various species of life, 8,400,000 species of life. And at the top of the evolutionary cycle, there's the human form of life. Very rare. Rarely achieved after transmigrating through 8,400,000 forms of life. And it's meaningful. Artha, dham. Da means to give and artha means value or meaningful. Artha, dham. The human form of life can give that. Artha, the goal. is meaningful because one can perform devotional service. The only chance to return back to God, this is Prabhupada's language, right from the purport. One who is sufficiently intelligent, pragya, should use the human form of body from the very beginning of life. Komara acharet, should use the human body from the very beginning of life. In other words, from the tender age of childhood, to practice the activities of devotional service, giving up all other engagements. So this is practice, this is the sadhana stage. So we're sadhakas, we're not in bhava bhakti yet or prema bhakti yet, we're sadhakas. So we're making choices. And the choices of what we engage in or with needs to be mindful of Krishna's to be pleased and take up those activities in that consciousness. That's this sva-artam. That's our real aim of life, the real mission of life, the real purpose of life. Prabhupada would sometimes simplify it and say the mission of human life is self-realization. But implied with self-realization is God-realization, because without God-realization isn't really self-realization. Or it's incomplete self-realization, aham brahmasmi. It's true, aham brahmasmi. But if one stops there, they may get a wrong idea. I'm Narayan. Aham. And I'll address others. Om Namo Narayanaya. Namo Narayanaya. Oh, Narayan. Living entities as God is offense. So self-realization implies God-realization. And giving up all other engagements, I'm repeating, but it doesn't mean trash the temporary or give up your worldly possessions. That's a Western notion. Little sharing, two sharings on this. When I turned 65, I was eligible for federal medical insurance. So I had to go for a little interview. And one of the questions, the person behind the glass wall, asking, have you taken a vow of poverty? Now, I was careful not to be smart aleck and say something they would think would be like smart alecky. So I said no. And then they explained, well, if you do, you still, you know, you're not, that doesn't create eligibility for Medicaid. No. But it's parlance out there in this world. And it's a Western conception and a Mayavadi conception. Even within religions of the West that are theistic. So, something that happens at our temples, many, if not everyone that I've been to, from time to time, people who are teachers, high school, college, teachers of religion or Western or Eastern philosophy or something like that, or, you know, Bible study people, and, you know, they bring their groups to the temple and they want to, like, you know, check us out. Not like participate, but just like, check us out. Like, you do in botany class, you look at here's a monarch butterfly. You've got this color and these dots and this kind of an antler, and there's a monarch butterfly. So we're the specimen on the board. They're coming to look at us. They read about it in a book and now they want to see one. That's how I take what they're doing. It's information. Maybe there's a little appreciation, but mainly it's satisfying curiosity. That's what educators want their students to like, broaden their perspective and so forth. So one of the generally they come at a time when we do our rituals, because that's what makes religions different. They have rituals. So they come at ritual time. Deity greeting, ooh, there's a ritual. Curtain opens, ooh, and then, you know, incense, ring a bell, and chamra, and so that's a ritual. We finish that one, and then we go and to Prabhupada's Vyasasan and worship Guru. That's another ritual. We sing certain songs, another ritual. And that's over, and we sit down and have another ritual, Bhagavatam class, and then comes prasadam. That's another ritual. So I've been through a number of those, and one of the questions, not always, but it's a common question. In order to become a member of this religion, you have to renounce all your worldly possessions, which means you have to be a monk. You have to live in the temple and be a monk to be a member of this religion. You know, they don't ask it differently. You know, you have congregation members here, or it's just the people that live in the temple. They ask, you have to renounce. So the answer I like to give is no. Same as I spoke to the person at the Social Security office. No. But what you do have to renounce is the misconception that you have possessions to renounce. Because nothing belongs to us. Everything belongs to the source of everything. They've never heard that one before. I mean, it's not a totally new concept, but never heard it explained that way. Because here we are in a temporary place, a sat. And it doesn't belong to us, and we're busy making it ours. And then we depart this world, and it goes back to, you know, the proprietor is the original proprietor, including the elements of the body and everything else. He is the proprietor, and he maintains a position of proprietorship. And then there's this false ego thing, or asat-grahat mentality of material consciousness that thinks otherwise and becomes attached to it inordinately. So you have to give up those engagements. We don't have to give up the objects. We have to give up the misconception that they're meant for our enjoyment. That's bhakti. Then this childhood, this is a very famous photograph. Srila Prabhupada instructing in the Dallas Gurukul, Dwarkadish, famous devotee. Prabhupada had a lot of affection for him, and he had a lot of affection for Prabhupada. And Prabhupada is, at least the explanation that I heard, what Prabhupada is doing is he's showing him how to make Sanskrit alphabet. Didn't happen when he was, you know, at that early stage of life, but it happened at this stage of life, showing by example, holding his hand and showing him how to make Sanskrit alphabet letters. Because, once again, he valued the future of the Krishna consciousness movement rests with the children of the Krishna consciousness movement. And therefore, it's very important for the society, not just the parents, but, you know, the whole Vaishnava community to extend itself, create situations where the younger members, younger generation devotees can become, can fulfill the message that Prahlad Maharaj is speaking here. Komara acharet pragyo dharman bhagavatani ha. Prabhupada's words, the whole purpose of Vedic civilization and of reading the Vedas is to attain the perfect stage of devotional service in the human form of life. Now, that goal of attaining the goal of life, nutte vidu, it's lust, largely. And even when someone has that idea, they have a misconception. Heaven. It's right in chapter 2, Bhagavad Gita, and it's true. Most people, that's the goal of life. There isn't anything more than that. Krishna says it. There isn't anything more than that. Prosper in this life by pious activity, go to the heaven after this life. And they think, some people, it's eternal. Heaven is eternal. Nate vidu swarta katimi Vishnu. Now, they're not to blame. They just don't have people that have knowledge. Transcendental knowledge. That which is beyond the temporary, descending through disciplic succession, still intact, not changed around over time. That's a big risk, and it happens. Prabhupada, in his purport, gradually, throughout the entire world, human society is losing interest in the perfection of life. You know, not so gradual anymore. But time erodes. Unless there's support, time destroys. But timelessness can replace it. Like this, I was thinking multiple times since this question was asked yesterday. Young Mataji, I forget her name, about, you know, doing something about gun violence. It's asat. So, we're concerned. But what's the root? The root isn't the behavior, change the behavior. It's going to come out some other way because karma and guna. And how do you deal with the root? It's consciousness. It doesn't mean, so the implication is not, don't do anything. We're supposed to end at what time? 9:15. Little story. I'll skip names. There was somebody who didn't like the Hare Krishna movement because during the counterculture era, they were a social activist. They saw the Hare Krishna people were cop-outs. In their words, banging on tambourines and dancing around with bed sheets and shaved heads. You know, cop-out. Be a social activist. She had, you know, we didn't say something bad or do something bad or harm her or something, just like we weren't with the social activism program, because that was, for many people, that was it. If you got your light on, that's what you do. And these other people are, you know, friend and enemy. Something happened in her life and it was a calamity. And she was a co-worker with somebody who was a devotee and was always very calm, very peaceful, very focused, very effective in the workplace. So she went and asked that co-worker, you know, what's your secret? She said, I don't think you want to know. Why not? Because you don't like the Hare Krishna people. You think they're cop-outs. Oh, no, you're a Hare Krishna person. Give it up. It's bad. She just smiled and didn't give it up. And then a calamity happened in her, this co-worker, who her husband was diagnosed as having cancer. And it was in the, whatever the state, terminal stage, category 4, whatever it's called. She was totally distressed and said, I need help. You're a spiritual person. I need spiritual help. I'm totally distressed. Samud Vigna Dia. Can you help me? She said, I can suggest the way that I got helped, because I, my whole life I've been searching and I ruled out a lot of things, but I didn't find. So I can introduce you to the person who helped me find. She said, yes. So calamity can sometimes be an opportunity, right? In our life, there's sometimes calamities. Sometimes more than sometimes. Not necessarily calamities, but, you know, tough times. So there's a purpose. You know, it's easier to talk about. It's another thing to maintain the consciousness of remembering Krishna through calamities and difficulties and hard times. But if you don't know the goal of life and you're not interested in the goal of life, then it's just calamity-oriented. It's gun control-oriented, or my husband has terminal cancer-oriented. And when that's gone, you forget. Just like happened in New York. I won't go on too much. When 9/11 happened, the whole city of New York went upside down. Their bubble, we're New Yorkers. No one can touch us. The bubble was burst, and they were vulnerable. New Yorkers don't like to be vulnerable. They don't like to admit that they're vulnerable. They're in this, you know, other space. We're New Yorkers. Nothing can harm us. It's gone. People became very religious for a while. For about a month. Really, exceptionally, without the detail. And then it started to fade. Business as usual. You know, Grahakvatanam, consciousness. Durashaya, consciousness. The default position kicked in. Because human society is losing interest in the perfection of life. Look at the educational, go on and on. Even just philosophy, what to speak of Krishna consciousness, just, you know, how many people are interested in becoming philosophy majors? There are some people. But, you know, that's not their preponderance. It's something else. Technology and engineering and things. And get money. Not like, what's the goal of life? Goal of life is get money. Do what gets money. Hiranyakashipu. Money and the opposite sex, because money will help you. Anyway. And the result is vishatam tamishram. They glide down. Not knowing svartha gatim, they glide down. Vishatam tamishram. This is, so that attachment to the temporary, this is embedded in Prahlad's teachings, is a problem. And you have to address it. Devotees that want to go back to Godhead in this human form of life. So here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comments. At the end of the last chapter, it was mentioned that Prahlad was compassionate and friendly. And the classmates, this is instructional for us to help people who are attached or, you know, confused. Muyanti. Confused. Maybe not. Anyway. He was friendly. He was friendly to his teachers and to his father, as well as to the students. So how did that manifest? He gave transcendence. Birth as a human is rare. one attains human form by good fortune, and it is transient. Although you exist today, it is not certain you will exist tomorrow. Now, the soul will exist, but the body will not. So, Prabhupada spoke on this so many times, so many ways. You don't know what your next life is. You could become a dog. You become a cat. You can become, you don't know. You don't know. And life is, time is slipping by. Well, I'll do it later. I'm busy being successful. Urgency. He's speaking to five-year-old boys with this voice of urgency. Question, a doubt. How can bhakti be perfected in such a short time? One lifetime. Artadam. The human form of life, properly guided, has that capacity. It's not notional. It's not dreamland. The gift of the Bhagavatam, the gift of transcendental life, is in this life qualify oneself to go back to Godhead. The distance may be great, that's okay. The human form of life has that capacity by design. And it's not just for some people, the storybook people. It's for us. That's the gift of the Bhagavatam. That's the gift of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the giver of the Bhagavatam. So, we'll take some time. See if there's some discussion. Yes. Do we have the portable mic? Here.
Okay. I have two questions if there is time. Okay. So, talking about the chewing, the chew it program, so we see that after decades of practicing Krishna consciousness, years of being a devotee, sometimes, life situations or a calling or some need may bring a devotee back to chewing something that they have already kind of moved away from. So in that situation, there is like spectrum of different situation. Yeah. Yes. So it can be on one end, a devotee completely giving up Krishna consciousness and going back to the chewing the chew it program. Or the other end of the spectrum where a devotee is still fixed, but have to go back to the material program. So I was wondering if you could share some thoughts on, because we see this often happening in a devotee life after years of practicing. So what are your thoughts on how to see this in other devotees' life and how to see this happen in a devotee's life? To see in a proper perspective that, yeah, and how to help.
There's several things about how to see it. One of them is Prabhupada saying, when somebody leaves, don't be surprised. Be surprised if they stay. Meaning, conditioning is very strong. Submission is maybe there in the beginning for a variety of reasons. We want relief, etc. And when the relief is gone, when the distress that we want relief from is gone, we check out because the motivation wasn't top. It was conditional, and conditional is addressed and someone goes away. Don't be surprised. Another expression is Bhakti Siddhanta's, where submission slackens. Then one may go away. Then another is offense. One may go away. Because offense is very significant. It blocks bhakti. So, there could be other reasons why. Or combination. Good news is, Krishna never forgets. And the Bhagavatam says that devotee never forgets. Even if they try. That's super soul. The kindness of super soul for the service that has been done. They may try. They may become covered and, you know, the remembrance is dim, but they can't forget. Now, what to do? Start with what not to do. Don't judge. Big one. Don't fault find. Another is recognize your own limits. Don't be in the rescuer consciousness. There's very easy. Kartaham iti manyate. Let me go rescue. So don't do that. Be in the mood of humble service. Now it's what to do after what not to do. And you may not know what to do, but maintain the mood of humble service and be a well-wisher in the mood of service, not the mood of a rescuer. Be a servant. Non-judgmental servant. Pray for the person and pray to Krishna for intelligence. What's the best way to help this person? Be a good example. If you're trustworthy, more likely the person will be willing to accept something that you may have to offer. And if you're not trustworthy, or they're fearful or angry or whatever, covered, then whatever you say is going to be no. Or do is going to be no. So, serve the person in even some simple ways that you know are reasonable. They may say, you know, get out of here. Don't give me prasadam. I don't know. Whatever, you know, so but you extend in that mood of humble service. And even if the person feels they're in this negative space or whatever, hurting space, someone has shown some kindness, they won't be forgotten. They may even, you know, respond in a negative or harsh or get out of here way. It'll touch the heart. You know, little drops of kindness. Genuinely expressed in the mood of humble service, not the mood of rescuer consciousness. And then, if someone, just like this individual, the co-worker, they saw, here's a spiritual personality. I need spiritual help. even I got this ideology thing that's from the past, I need spiritual help. And here's a spiritual person. So be that. And then when people reach out, then still be cautious about, no, not too much. Not too little. That super soul has to guide that. And super soul is in their heart, and if your well-wishing is towards that person and you're dear to Krishna, Krishna will help that person. Prayer. Or just extending care. And we're in super soul's hands anyways. All of us. Something else. We're at, yes, in the back.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is regarding the Kaumaram, that verse Pragyo.
Kaumara so, Acharet Pragyo.
Pragyo. So the age to start is below 5 is what I understood, the spiritual practices.
Why not?
So in terms of, you know, how we inspire the kids to start the spiritual practices.
Good example, that's how.
Yeah, so apart from being a good example, is there something else that we can do to, you know,
yeah,
get them more inspired?
Sure.
In terms,
create a warm environment that invites them. And when you see some interest, you nourish the interest.
For example,
someone likes to draw. Give them materials to draw. Someone likes to, you know, they see you doing arti. They want to do arti. Don't give them fire, but you give them something they can do. Here's the chamara. You can wave the chamara. Whatever it is they like to do, you know, within reason, of course, you provide a resource. You're supporting their development according to their interest and natural inclination. You're a well-wisher. You're a friend. You're a support in their life. And you're a good example.
More in terms of how do we inspire them, chanting is what I wanted to...
Good example. Don't push. Attract.
Thank you, Maharaj.
It has to, you know, children that are pushed, many cases I know, later in life, when they're not little, they give it up because they were pushed. Do it together as a family. Invite. No push. Attract. Don't push. Combine it with something they like, but not, you know, in a manipulative way and in a devotional way. Don't do a business deal. You do that and I'll do that. Okay. Yes, up front.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. Two questions, Guru Maharaj. One, when we were looking in the slides, Hiranyakashipu was afraid of his son.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to know, in this mood or in this situation of afraid or fearfulness, if one surrenders, if one can surrender in the, like, I cannot do anything, I'm helpless, I surrender. I'm afraid, I surrender. If someone surrenders, how much they can get attached to the devotional service or how they're...
Well, that depends upon their association and how deep their affinity for matter is. Because according to the Bhagavatam, fear arises from affinity for matter. Vayam dutiyam abhiniveshitakshyat. So, if I have affinity for matter and I take shelter of something, Krishna or devotional service, out of fear, same, when that, like the New Yorkers, when the cause of the fear appears to be gone, it's gone. The taking shelter of praying and worshiping and, you know, spiritual activity. So it depends on how deep the attachment for the temporary is. That answer your question? No. You got a puzzled look on your forehead. Not?
Not really.
Ask it again. Ask it differently.
Okay, how could he get more attached to the devotional service in that situation?
In that situation, good association. We've all had experience, or most of us, almost all of us have had experience reaching out. And when you find somebody that begins to take shelter of devotional service, it's great. And we don't, and continued association is needed. I mean, I have this experience particularly with college preaching. And someone shows interest, but, you know, if there's no association to support it, it fades because there's lots of other stuff going on, lots of other options and lots of other desires and lots of other association, and doesn't, you know, there's no loss, but to continue in the realm of bhakti, it requires association. Sadhu sangha is needed to begin in the most advanced and in the intermediate stage. Most important. And with sadhu sangha comes all the other bhajana kriya activity. Okay?
Second one, Maharaj. Prabhupada has said in his words that gradually in the entire world, the interest of...
Gradually what?
Through the entire world, the interest of perfection of life, losing the interest of perfection of life.
Okay.
So it's like something universal kind of statement.
Well, that's what he's saying.
Yeah. So what do you think, Maharaj? Like, what do you think? Because losing the interest is something, they have the knowledge a little bit, but they are losing the interest. Or is it the only ignorance reason? Or something else also.
Which kind of reason?
Ignorance.
Ignorance reason?
Is it the only ignorance or something
but
else?
But ignorance is the root of everything else. You can say, you can express it in other ways. It's the influence of Kali. But Kali works through ignorance. Propagating, expanding ignorance. And ignorance has lots of manifestations. And therefore, since the root cause of suffering is ignorance, propagation of knowledge. I mean, it has to be done appropriate for audiences, but that's the principle. Okay, we're going to end. It's 9:15. See you again for the rest, some continuation of chapter 6. The Prabhupada Ki Jai.